City Talk 105.9, it's just gone 2 o'clock on a weekday, and that means it's time for only one thing around now, and that is an hour of me, Will Batchelor. But the good news is, it's not just me, it's me as always in the company of a different guest who has volunteered to come up the tower 450 feet above the streets of Liverpool and imagine that their house is on fire. Not the nicest proposition, I grant you, but there's some good news. The good news is that A, it's only a metaphorical fire, and B, we give them time to dash back in and rescue 5 records. Only 5. That's why the show's called Take 5. You see, you're cottoning on. And the gentleman putting himself into that unfortunate position today is Brian Nash, a.k.a. Nasher, formerly of Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Nasher, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Can I call you Nasher?
You can call me Nasher.
You've pretty much been Nasher since the beginning, even when the band was at its height. You were Nasher, weren't you?
Well, I was Nasher before I was in Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Of course.
I was Nasher when I was in St. Teresa's Junior School.
Is that right? Because I'd love a name like Nash that you can turn into a great proper nickname. Of course, Dennis the Menace and Nasher as well. I call myself Batch occasionally, but it's not the same. Did you not have any competition with, I don't know, have you got brothers who also wanted to be called Nasher?
No. I've got one sister, but the...
You can't call a sister Nash, a girl Nasher,
no,
can
no,
you?
No, you can't.
Bad be connotations.
But the in the 70s going to school, it was at the height of the Smash commercials with the metal robots.
Yes.
And so I used to get that in school, for Nash Get Smash.
Yeah, I like it. Is that what started your musical voyage, singing along to those Smash adverts?
Oh, no, I think my musical voyage started from growing up in a house with a father who was, like, really into his music.
Yeah.
He was into his music, not the music that I liked, but I've always been surrounded by music, like most people from Liverpool, you know. If it wasn't jazz, like in my dad's case, or the Beatles, it was a lot of country and western. It was all my mum's sisters were all into the country and western, so there was battles at the parties between the Beatles fans and the country and the Billy Joe Spears. It always seemed to be that blankets on the ground always won out, though.
And yeah, well, you have to play what the ladies want, don't you? Yeah. That's the problem. Do you still hate country and western now, or have you sort of softened towards it?
I don't know. I couldn't say I hate it because I don't listen to it. It's country and western.
I think it's a guilty pleasure.
There's too many branches of country and western now. I don't know what's what. You know, there's who's the young girl, Taylor Swift?
Yes.
You know, I've heard their stuff, and that's supposed to be country and western, but it don't really sound like country and western to me.
But all the edges have been blurred, haven't they? Back in the day, you knew where you were, but nowadays, yeah, Everything's crossover from urban to country and western to rap to grit or grime, whatever it's called. You know?
That'd be the one to hear, wouldn't it? Dizzy Rascal doing country and western.
But you know, stranger things have happened. Stranger things have happened.
I'm not holding my breath.
I wouldn't hold my breath, but you never know. Maybe one day, you never know. So, you say your dad got you into music. I know the first two albums your dad bought you, because I've been reading up on you. It was the Beatles 1966 to 70, and also David Bowie. And if you're going to get any two albums from your dad, I'd say that's a pretty good start.
Yeah, my dad was involved in the trade union, and I always knew that once a year when the trade union's conferences happened, usually somewhere around in the northwest, that he would he'd be bringing an album back. That was the first album he brought back for me, was the Beatles, the blue one. You know, and it's all there, isn't it?
I don't follow the logic of that. I know about Liverpool fans bringing trainers back from Brussels, but where's the logic in your dad going to a trade union conference?
Know.
What, did he just buy you an album as sort of a treat because he'd
been
away?
Yeah, well, it's better for your teeth than a stick of Blackpool Rock,
isn't
it?
That's true, yeah, better for your ears, certainly. And I think it was your old man who bought you your first guitar as well.
Yeah. It was a Suzuki classical thing that it wasn't loud enough to play like the Sex Pistols on, because the strings were like the nylon strings. So I took the strings off and put metal strings on it, and it bent the neck. You know, I didn't realise at such a young age you weren't supposed to do that. And I've still got it now, and it's still got a neck like a banana. It's in the loft in my house.
As you mentioned punk, and we are going to get to some punk shortly, your first band was a punk band you set up with your mate, wasn't it, called Smuzz?
Yeah, it was absolutely crucial to have a band name with a double Z in it, like the Buzzcocks, because we all like the Buzzcocks. But it was one of those bands, really, that was 6 months in a bedroom, one gig, and then it was over. You know?
Like the best punk bands as well. Well, listen, a lot of musos listen to this show, so hello if you're a muso out there. If you ever went to one of those Smuzz gigs, or the one and only Smuzz gig.
The Smuzz gig, yeah. It was at St. Teresa's School.
They'll all claim to be. It's like people claiming they're at the first Oasis gig, isn't it? There'll be millions of people claiming to be at the Smuzz gig at St.
Teresa's.
I'd
be claiming I wasn't at the first Oasis gig.
We shall get on to what you like and indeed what you don't like later on. And of course, we will get on some punk, because I had to give you Sun Punk. I've negotiated with the bosses at the highest possible level at this station, who don't normally let such things go out on the airwaves. And I said, look, come on, it's Nasher. But let's start at the beginning, shall we? Going back to that album that your dad got you, and start with some Beatles. Which one have you gone for?
Something, the George Harrison composition. Mm. I think George was my favourite Beatle by miles and miles. He was the coolest. For me, he wrote the three best Beatles songs. Here Comes the Sun, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and Something. And also for the guitar solo in Something, which is a brilliant guitar solo.
First A-side that they let George have, this was.
Really?
Yeah, it was the first time they let him onto the A-side of a Beatles single. And it's gone on to become, I think, the second most covered Beatles song after Yesterday.
Yeah.
So maybe they should have let him on a bit sooner.
Oh, it's an epic tune. It's an epic tune, and it never fails to move me either.
Okay, well, prepare for some hair-raising action now, because on City Talk 105.9, on Take 5, with me, Will Batchelor, and Nasher, a.k.a. Brian Nash, we're going to play his first choice. It is Something by The Beatles. City Talk 105.9, that's Something by The Beatles, the first tune of my guest on today's Take 5, who is Brian Nash, a.k.a. Nasher. You may remember him from standing there playing the guitar in Frankie Goes to Hollywood, but that's not all you've been doing, is it, Brian? Do you get annoyed when all people can talk about is the Frankie Goes to Hollywood period of your career, which, let's face it, was only short?
No, not really. I mean, if Mick Jagger lives to be 100, he'll still be Mick Jagger of the Rolling Stones, even if he makes 10 of the best records he ever makes. From between 70 and 90, people always have to have labels, and no, it's something. Although I never mind talking about it, because it was a great part of my life. You know, it enabled me to do things that I never would have done if I was an electrician for the council, which is what I was before. You know,
which is how you started. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about that journey. We know about Smuzz, which had its first and only gig at St. Teresa's. I was at that gig, by the way. and we know that you eventually went on to form, it was Sons of Egypt, wasn't it?
Yeah, with my mate Ped, who eventually went on to being Frankie with us, and Holly.
Mm.
But before Holly was singing, Gerard O'Toole was singing, and we had John Crowley and Julie Irvin. We managed to get a TV slot on Exchange Flags.
Yes.
And I've just seen the video recently, and it was some bad hair. And even worse, a bad headband.
Yeah, and you were wearing some sort of slippers as well, weren't you?
Oh, the bad Chinese slippers as well. I mean, they were like de rigueur if you were out in Cagney's. Everybody has to have a fashion faux pas in their past, don't they?
It does, but if I can say this with all due respect, you look like a proper stand-up Liverpool geezer now. You've come in, you've got the old Berghaus anorak that you've now taken off because I told you it was too rustly. You got jeans on, you got a baseball cap and a scarf when you came in. You look like a tough guy, actually. I wouldn't mess with you, Nasher, if you don't mind me saying. Was it difficult to experiment with fashion in the 80s? Were you still a tough lad back in the 80s, or were you different then?
I don't know. I'm not a tough lad. Appearances can be deceptive, you know. but no, there's, during the time of Frankie, when people started getting a few quid, everywhere we went, and it was special, we used to call it the fashion wars between Holly and Paul, that wherever we would set foot in a European country, you know, they'd be on to the record company rep saying, where's the Comme des Garçons shop, the Jean Paul Gaultier shop, the Gucci shop? There would be fashion wars, because if you got to the Matsuda shop first and got that shirt, that meant nobody else could get it, you know. So we'd land in the hotel, the bags would go down, and Holly and Paul would go in the opposite directions, and one would be heading for Comme des Garçons, one would be heading for something else, you know. And then in later stages, Mark and Peds kind of got involved in it, but I think I was the least fashion conscious about.
Just point you towards the nearest Berghaus shop and you'll be fine. You mentioned Paul, that's Paul Rutherford, of course. He and Holly were the two more flamboyant characters of the band, and the rest of you were sort of referred to affectionately as the token straights, weren't you?
Yeah, which is okay. I mean, it's still, even to this day, when people find out about my dodgy past and they ask me about, like, I thought you were all gay. No. So, I mean, when you meet fans who know the ins and outs of the bands, they all know that. But to a lot of people, either came afterwards or weren't interested at that time. I guess we were a gay band.
But again, you talk about appearances being deceptive. You know, people might assume that a lad from the mean streets of Norris Green, as you were and still are, brought up the tough way, you know, trade union background, may well, you know, not not get along well with gay guys, may not be prepared to mix with gay guys, but in fact, it clearly was never an issue for you.
Well, a lot of that stems from the fact of going to gay clubs. When I used to go out in town with the guys who were in Sons and Egypt, often we'd end up in the masquerade because it was open late. And that was, you know, that was like, well, we're going to get a drink. Well, that's open, let's go there. There's no difference between them, really, except what they do when they get back home and who's on the other side of their bed.
Yeah, which frankly is no one's business but their own, I guess.
No, but it's... No, I've never felt threatened at all by gay people.
Why would
they
we?
They are what they are.
I am what I am. City Talk 105.9 is the station. This is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, and Nasha, who's talking me through the five records he would rescue from his burning home. Going to get to the second one very shortly. Going to hop back in time again to your punk era, Nasha. Before we do that, you have to rescue at least one film, or I say at least only one film or TV series.
It's a recent thing, but I'm a huge fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm, following on from being a huge fan of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And I'm figuring if my house is getting burnt down, there's not going to be much laughs to be had in the coming months. So I think to have a little bit of Larry under your arm would definitely chase the blues away.
Absolutely. That's Larry David, who wrote Seinfeld but didn't appear in it, although everyone thought that the character of George Costanza was pretty largely based on him. And then he did appear as the title character in Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is great. It's just about a man who sort of goes through life, despite being hugely successful. He is the writer of a successful sitcom, gets into all sorts of scrapes and doesn't quite know how to fit into the world, does he?
No. I so nearly missed it as well. I was, when the first series came out, I was like really hyped up because of being such a huge Seinfeld fan. I kind of watched the first one and the format was a bit weird and I didn't really get it. And it was only when a mate of mine said, no, you got to give it a second look and you got to watch two or three and then you'll pick it up. I'm trying to do the same thing with my son now. I've battered him into submission with Seinfeld.
How old is your son now?
He's 17.
Any younger than that and you won't get Curb?
No.
And I think the older you get and the grumpier you get, the more you get it. So
yeah, we can all relate.
Yeah, we certainly can. You can have that, you can rescue it, and you can have a bit of punk as well. This, as I say, was negotiated at the highest levels for you.
Thank you.
You weren't coming on without punk. And you said you liked the Buzzcocks earlier, but you've gone for a different punk anthem. Which one?
It's one of the greatest records ever made, God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols. Not so much about the hype when it was released and it being in the Silver Jubilee year
1977,
and all that, or
yeah,
the hype of the filth and the fury across the front pages of the Sun and the other tabloids. It's just the way the record sounds. It just sounds like a freight train coming. I think the Pistols were fortunate in that time is that they had a great producer, where a lot of these, like when The Clash made their first album, they probably made it on an 8-track with some tape off, but the Pistols had Chris Thomas, and it's the wall of sound, and it was life-changing for me. Despite it not being the first punk record I ever heard, I can put myself right back in the place, sitting in Mark O'Toole's house. Gerard O'Toole had been down to Virgin that day and bought it, and the family were all sitting around watching TV, and I had headphones on, heard this God Save the Queen. What's all this fuss about, you know? I've got to hear what this fuss is about. And that was it.
We're taking you back now, Nasha, to Mark O'Toole's house, in your head at least. You might have to go and stay there because your one's burning down, by the way. City Talk 105.9, it's Take 5, and we're going to play Nasha's second choice. It is from 1977, God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols. Oh yes, do I like that? Wall of sound is the phrase indeed. That was the phrase of Nasha, aka Brian Nash, from Frankie Goes to Hollywood, who is my guest for this hour on Take 5. He's here with me until 3 o'clock this afternoon. He's got three more tracks still to come, and if they're anything as good as the first two, you know you got to stick around and find out what they are. City Talk 105.9, back in a minute. City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation. Both of those things come courtesy this hour of my guest for Take 5, who is Brian Nash, a.k.a. Nasha of Frankie Goes to Hollywood fame. Tell us about the end game of Frankie, because it didn't end particularly happily, did it?
No, kind of. It was. If we came in with a bang, then it definitely ended with a whimper. For people that young to experience what happened to us, it was going to put immense pressure on relationships within the band.
You were like 21.
Yeah. Lawyers, record companies, people who, you know, it suits them for to be conflict and division within the band. It was only when I read Holly's book that I really got to know who he was as a person, and that, like, all these times when he wasn't being a team player, to a certain extent, you can't blame him. He grew up in a tough part of Liverpool. And that does, that must have an effect on your personality and make you isolationist a bit, you know. And I guess I understand it now, the division by other people. The fact that once all these other people get involved, it's not five guys in a room anymore, where longevity, I think, could be achieved if the five guys can be in the room together and sort it out. But once you're at that stratosphere of stardom, there's never five guys in a room anymore. There's five guys and an accountant and a manager and a lawyer and a guy from the record company. And everybody's guarded. It never gets down to that thing where you're all in the room and you can air your grievances and it stays within there, you know. And towards the end, you know, I remember it was an ugly scene in a hotel room with Holly, and we kind of fronted him up because we wanted to know what he was doing and, you know, with regards to what was going to happen with the future of the band, and we didn't think that he was into it anymore. I think it was built up to a long time of you know, like this volcano waiting to erupt, where if that could have been, you know, dissipated a bit further down the line with a series of five or six smaller outbursts.
Smaller eruptions, yeah.
But I don't know. It's a tough thing. And so with the benefit of hindsight, I think people would have acted and behaved differently.
If you're in a club now and Two Tribes comes on or Relax comes on, that will fill the floor. They are tuned and they have lasted to this day. Do you think if you'd stayed together, there were more anthems to come, or do you think you'd reach the peak of your creative powers?
I think the sound would have changed, but with regards to them songs, I still think when you hear them today, they were outstanding records for the time, and you know, that's something that's not just down to the band. You know, it's been documented, the people who were involved in the making of that record,
Trevor Horn
and how it sounded, you know, who kind of hijacked it. You know, they made every opportunity it was made to be, you know, it was. They tried to illustrate that it was them, it's us, it's not them, they're just like five mugs from Liverpool.
Hmm. What was it like for you back in those days of mega stardom? Could you walk down the street and be unrecognised, or were you getting mobbed as well?
I remember being in Oxford Street, and we were shopping, and ended up, there was like people following us, you know, into the shops and that. We used to have people hanging outside the flat and outside the recording studios and stuff, but not being chased down the street, not like a Hard Day's Night.
And of course, there was life after Frankie as well. You're a solo artist in your own right now. I brought out your first album, Ripe, in 1999. Your second album, Le Grand Fromage, which I know enough about French is the big cheese, in 2002. And your third album last year, which I don't understand, Allo Minimo.
No, it's still not out here. That's how I haven't updated my website for so long. It's going to be out early next year. Allo Minimo is, I believe, the Spanish phrase for the minimum. And coming from the bombast and overproduction, some might say, of Frankie, I've gone through the stages of songwriting where I wanted to get to the point where I am now, whereas it's the song and the guitar, or the minimum amount of instrumentation for the song to stand up on its own. And it was a real difficult task, because if you know you have all those tools and all those harmonies and melodies that you can add and other instrumentation, it's quite a discipline to just go, no, just have it with the guitar and the vocal and see how it stands up.
Would it not help if you tried to get that across? I think that's a great idea, because I, although there are some highly produced songs that I like, I love that stripped down sound as well. Would it not be better to put that in English on the album so that people got it?
No. Well, when you see the sleeve of the album, it's got a close-up, like a letterbox shot of somebody's eyes, and she's got really over-the-top makeup on, false eyelashes with diamante chips on the eyelashes, and it's so far away from being the minimum that I really loved it. You know, it's like, well, yeah, that's, you can't be over-the-top enough, and yet what's inside the record is, I think it's some of the best songs I've ever written. My career as a musician now is just because it's within me and I want to be able to record it and play it. If it never sells a copy, I couldn't really give a toss.
Well, maybe we can help it sell a copy. Go to www.nasher.co.uk is the website.
No, the MySpace. Go to the MySpace one. That's where I'll have all the links.
Is that MySpace/Nasher, presumably?
Yeah, MySpace.com/Nasher.
Nasher is my guest. He is Brian Nash, formerly of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, now doing stuff on his own. And in fact, you were part of the 2008 opening night celebrations, if you like, with Ringo Starr back in January 2008, and that is the night that the photograph you're going to save refers to.
Yeah, I was really lucky. I've known Pete Wiley for a long time. I think all his relationships are on and off. He seems to be falling out with people and then making up with them. I've never really fallen out with him, but I've lost touch with him.
I've got back
in touch with him. Yeah, yeah. Maybe I've fallen out with him now and I just haven't found out.
Give it a text, Pete, if you have.
he asked me to play guitar for him and do a bit of backing vocals. During the afternoon, we were doing the sound check and Ringo came on. It was quite weird, like Ringo's in the building. Mm. You think it was the Pope. It was only Ringo. And he looked like Steptoe. He's just like this little old bloke, you know, walking around with us, giving the peace sign to everyone. But I was on stage and Ringo invited everybody on to sing Power to the People. Mm. And a photographer friend of Wiley's, Robert, managed to take a picture of me and Ringo and Ringo's guitar player. But the weirdest thing is, again, I'm wearing a baseball hat and a Birkhouse jacket and I look like I'm security ushering Ringo off the stage. And, you know, you could talk about all the countless great photographs of me family and I've just inherited all. My dad died earlier this year and he was a keen photographer and I've inherited thousands and thousands of fantastic photographs. But I suppose they all get trumped by being photographed with a beetle in the wild.
Absolutely right.
Especially as there's only two of them left now.
Yeah, and if it is Ringo.
Yeah, well, if it was the other one, I don't think I'd be in a photograph with him. I'd just be decking him. Go and take your Converse off. You're nearly 70, act your age.
Is that right? You're not a Macca fan?
No, I don't like the Macca. Can't do the Macca.
You don't like Oasis? You don't like McCartney?
No, I do like Oasis. I don't like Macca.
What did you think about it? Because afterwards, of course, Ringo famously made a couple of sly comments about Liverpool on the Jonathan Ross show. And he was subject to a wall of criticism, not least from this station, I have to say. Did you think that was fair or did you think it was taken out of context?
I hate Jonathan Ross more than I hate McCartney, so wouldn't I didn't even watch it.
Okay.
Did he make jokes about his willy?
Jonathan Ross?
Yeah.
Well, he normally does. I think we'll have a news story when Jonathan Ross doesn't make jokes about his willy. That'll be
Was it £7 million a year is he on?
For making jokes about his willy, which the rest of us do for free. Yeah.
To be £7 million to be a second-rate, what's his name? Who's the American guy he copies?
David Letterman.
Mr. Letterman.
I thought you were going to say a second-rate Paul Ross then. That'd be even worse.
Yeah.
Pause for a second. City Talk 105.9 is the station. Pause before we get into trouble for saying rude words on air. I hope you'll forgive us. You'll forgive my guest, certainly, because he is Nasher and he used to be in Frankie Goes to Hollywood, so you can more or less forgive him anything. You don't, however, need to forgive him over the musical choices that he is saving from his metaphorically burning home, because they're all good, including the next one, which is Nasher.
Nothing compares to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm a huge Prince fan. I think this version was on the greatest hits and it's in playing it live with Rosie Gaines. And if you've never seen Prince live, even if you don't like him, you know, travel hundreds of miles and go and see him because he is one of the greatest showmen I've ever seen. And if not in the world, his records put me into different places. He breaks the rule book. He's just such a blinder musician, it makes me sick. Not just guitar player, Hammond organ player, drummer, singer, and he dances as well. Although, maybe age is catching up with him now. I don't know if he's got arthritic hips these days.
He should do all the grinding he's done, all the action they've seen. They certainly should be arthritic if there's any justice in the world. I'll tell you what, we're not going to worry about his hips now, we'll worry about his music. I'm even going to forgive him for using the first example, I think, of text speak in a song ever. It is Nothing Compares to You. Why couldn't he just write it out? By Prince, City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, Nothing Compares to You by Prince. That was the third choice of my guest on today's Take 5. I'm Will Batchelor. My guest, more importantly, is Brian Nash, a.k.a. Nasher. You may remember him from the Frankie Goes to Hollywood days, but he's not stopped since then. He's still got some output. And if you go to his MySpace page, that's myspace.co.uk/Nasher, or indeed his website, nasher.co.uk, you can find out what he has been up to. Is music just a side career now? Have you pursued a proper job, or have you did you bank enough during the Frankie days to allow you to live off the fat of Frankie forever?
We didn't make any money from record sales from Frankie Goes to Hollywood until 5 years after the band split up.
Really? Why not?
You had to recoup £1.8 million recording costs out of our 8% of retail.
Well, that's because you spent about 3 months in the studio, wasn't it?
A bit longer than that. Well, we didn't, actually. Trevor Horn, yeah, let's rack in an 120-piece orchestra for the third single off an album that's already failed.
Okay. Yeah. So the money you made eventually, when it did come, was it a huge amount, or was it just sort of, enough to set you up a little bit?
It made me able to put a down payment on a house.
Really?
When we first got into the black, I was on the dole. And I was getting housing benefits and living in a rented house. And this means that we got a cheque that put us into the black for the first time in terms of our record sales. We'd always got money from the publishing. But the record sales, yeah, was the greatest hits album, the first greatest hits album.
What about the T-shirts? Who got all the money from the T-shirts?
Well, but the T-shirt, it's not a lot of money on the T-shirt. You know,
everyone had one,
you're
though.
You're not buying a house on the wheel on the T-shirt, mate.
I tell you what, it's selling enough of those T-shirts, and I'm sure you did. I'm sure you could get, maybe on this side of the Wirral.
Well, the T-shirts are back out there again. There's another Frankie Greatest compilation out there at the moment through Universal.
Yeah.
And
I spoke to Holly Johnson about it on this very show a few weeks ago. Do you see anything from that? Do you get a royalty from that?
I haven't had no contact with them. I actually only got a copy of the record 2 weeks after it had been out. Don't know. I'll let you know when the royalty check lands and I'll see.
Yeah, let me know and take me for a pint. That'd be nice. We could split it.
We're on, yeah.
You said some conciliatory things about Holly earlier, that you understand him more, especially after reading his book, that you understand why he was how he was. It sounds like perhaps there has been a thawing in what was a slightly frosty relationship for a while. Where do you stand now, you and the rest of the lads, with Holly?
I was speaking to him. I hadn't spoken to him for a while, and then some years ago, I was around the corner from his house, and I had his phone number, so I just rang him up and went round to see him. And he actually wasn't there, and Wolfgang let me in, and Holly came back 10 minutes later from a haircut, and it was great. I sat down, spoke to him, and it was like, it was cool. Life's too short to be... There was no bitterness for me carried forward for me. I didn't... When Frankie ended, I wasn't thinking, I hate him. It was never like that. And in recent years, Mark and Peds and Paul wanted to go out and do some work as Frankie Goes to Hollywood, but needed to wrestle control of the name from Holly. And they asked me if I would put my name to their case, which I did. And since then, he's not speaking to me. He's snubbed my MySpace friends request. And I think my Facebook one is pending, but I'm not holding my breath.
I love the idea of, it sounds like something you might hear in the schoolyard, that, doesn't it? He's not going to be my MySpace friend. You're nearly 50.
Yeah, he blanked me. He blanked me on MySpace.
Well, you never know. I get the impression that it's always going to be a roller coaster, isn't it? So hopefully there's going to be a thawing further down the line, and you can all be MySpace friends and Facebook friends and poke each other and Twitter each other and do whatever else you need to do in the modern world.
He slagged me off in a tweet.
In the meantime, let's go back to the old world, shall we? Do you remember books?
Yes.
Remember people used to read them before the internet?
Yes.
You had to save one from your burning house. Which one is it?
It's a book called Crazy from the Heat. It's the autobiography of David Lee Roth, former lead singer of Van Halen. It's a fantastic book. It's bite-sized chunks. Brilliant. You probably get it on Amazon for £1. Stick it in your toilet and just open it at any page. And it's like, it's written that like Dave sitting next to you at the bar.
What a review, to be honest. If they ever reprint it, I think they should put that on the cover. Stick it in your toilet and open it at any page. Says Nasher from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. City Talk 105.9 is the station. Got two more tunes from Nasher still to come between now and 3 o'clock. Don't go anywhere. City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation. I'm Will Batchelor, and for this hour, or what little remains of it, I'm in conversation with Nasher from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. You may know him as Brian Nash, particularly if you went to St. Teresa's school in Norris Green, and even if you went to that early Smuzz gig. Do you remember me? I was standing at the back. Honestly, I was there. We're not going to play a Smuzz song for you now, I'm afraid. I don't think their back catalogue is enormous. We are, however, going to play the next choice from Nasher, which is a bit of Tears for Fears, a bit of late 80s kind of smoochy section.
Yeah, Sowing the Seeds of Love. I just think it's an outstanding recording and an outstanding piece of songwriting. And, you know, as with all of these things, it takes years to write, and when it comes out, kind of gets snubbed by everyone and nobody's seen the beauty that I saw in it. I think it's a fantastic record, sounds brilliant, lyrics are absolutely fantastic as well. Fair play to them.
Tears for Fears, fair play to him indeed. City Talk 105.9, let's play it now, Sowing the Seeds of Love. City Talk 105.9, that's Sowing the Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears. Just one track still to come from Nasher, a.k.a. Brian Nash. Brian, forgive me, we're going off on a lot of tangents this show because I'm enjoying your company and you've got some great tales to tell. I never got to the bottom of my previous question, which is, do you have a proper job as well as doing the music on the side? Do you have a proper job?
Well, some years ago, because I was an electrician, I started doing bits of jobs for mates, and because good tradesmen are hard to find,
Yeah. It
word just spreads on here, so I end up, I do maybe about one a week, but it's good, you know, keeps you fit, get your hands dirty, and get to pick your work so for nice people.
Domestic jobs, industrial jobs?
I don't do any of that industrial. I try and do as little as possible, you know, but no big work, no rewires. I'm too old for all that. My knees can't do it anymore.
So you do a bit of sparking, back to the apprentice days when you're an apprentice electrician with Liverpool City Council.
Yeah.
In fact, not just an apprentice. You got the your certificate in the end, didn't you?
Yes, but I got all my certificates, but didn't finish my apprenticeship. Went to become a pop star.
Well, that's not a bad excuse not to. Do you ever tell people when you're tinkering around in their fuse box and maybe a Frankie tune comes on the radio, do you ever look up and say, I played the guitar in that band?
No, do you know what? I'll tell you one funny story, though. I was in someone's, there's a plumber I know, and he's always getting me to do little bits for him. And I went round to this guy's house, and on the top of his landing was stacks and stacks of vinyl, all alphabetically ordered, absolutely, obviously a train spotter. So I've gone through it, and there's Pleasure Dome. So I've got to have the Sharpie out of my toolbox and signed it for him and just put it back in the thing. And I'm going to think, I would love to be the fly on the wall when or if he ever pulls that out and goes, hey, how did that kid? I don't remember this being signed.
I got Nash's autograph on Pleasure Dome. That's just doubled the price I could get on eBay for that.
I should have put inside of it, by the way, your fuse box needs changing. Not up to 17th edition.
Exactly. By the way, 112 quid plus VAT, but I'll take 100 for cash.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That's a great one. Well, if that's you, if you're a train spotter out there with Pleasure Dome, go and check it right now. If Brian Nash has ever done a job in your house, you may well find that you are now the proud owner of a signed copy. Just a couple of minutes left, really, Brian. I just want to mention one more time, if I may, that if people want to buy your music, the stripped down version, myspace.com/Nasher is the best place to get it. Just tell us a little bit about it. We know it's stripped down. We know it's just almost a voice and a guitar. What do you sing about?
All sorts of stuff. Not about me. All sorts of things. I don't know. But it's an introspective. I'm going to put out a freebie, I think, for this year. There's a track called May Your God Go With You, which was written after the huge tsunami in Thailand, in the Far East. And it's about, you know, if God exists, where is he? In people's hour of need. I'm a healthy agnostic now, I think. And it's a question. Where were you when we needed you?
I've got to say, of all the people I've met, you seem, you know, some people take strength, if you like, from believing in God. You seem a very centered person. You're not bitter about, you know, the demise of Frankie or the lack of money you made despite its huge success. You're not bitter about the divisions and the split and the freezing relations with Holly. You're not bitter about sort of taking a step down from the megastardom that you did. You seem like a very happy person.
I am. I'm so happy to make you sick. You know, I've been married over 20, I better get this right in case she's listening, 23 years. And, you know, my life's great. What's money going to get me? Money ain't going to get me. You know, people always ask me about Frankie. Why don't you go, well, you know, they're all making fortunes. What's it going to get me? A nicer car? Better holiday? Nah, you're all right. I'm quite cool. And, you know, you can't be bitter. You can't be bitter about them experiences. Bitterness is negativity. And negativity eats you up. And, you know, I've always been like that. The glass is always half full.
Great stuff. No regrets, apart from maybe those Chinese slippers you wore on exchange flags that time.
Yeah. They'd be on eBay now, wouldn't they?
You could sign those as well. Got one more track to rescue from this metaphorically burning home we've put you in, Nasher. Which one are you going for?
George Michael, Playing for Time.
Tell us why.
Again, just brilliant, brilliant lyrics. And it was released when George was, you know, trying to step out of the shadows of Wham and being the pop star with the shuttlecocks down his trousers to try and do... It was the first steps of his crossover into becoming a serious artist. The lyrics are just outstanding. It's a very simple song. And he's a superstar. And it really saddened me recently to hear him being interviewed about Listen Without Prejudice and saying he didn't like it and he didn't rate it. And I find that quite sad. And if I ever bump into him when he's stoned in his Range Rover somewhere around North London, I'll be going, hey, George, blinds and sacked up, mate.
Yeah, Listen Without Prejudice wasn't that bad, you know.
Yeah.
Now stop moping.
And he was a superstar. I was talking to someone last night about when he played at the Freddie Mercury tribute and he did Somebody to Love. And it's this guy in his pink jacket and he just commanded it. And he's a superstar and I'd like him.
Brian Nash, a.k.a. Nasher, thanks for being my guest on Take 5. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome.
City Talk 105.9 is the station. Going to finish with Nash's final track for today's Take 5. And it is Praying for Time by the underrated, at least by him, George Michael album, Listen Without Prejudice. City Talk 105.9.